Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report. Today we've got another special holiday edition of Tantramar Report featuring Memram Cook Tantramar MLA Megan Mitten for a year in review conversation. Megan Mitten, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So looking back on 2021, I've got a few highlights jotted down here. There was a lot of ground covered in 2021. I wanted to start off marking the fact that you had a big year personally because you welcomed another child.
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience of being an MLA and having a child?
Well, we welcomed Henry into the world about halfway through this year. And it definitely is a different experience when you need to basically look at all the policies that exist in the legislature and figure out what ones need to change because they really haven't been looked at, and figure out what needed to change so that I'd be able to serve my constituents and do my job without taking a year off, like, you know, typical for most people who have babies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit more policy oriented than I think most babies. But I'm proud of some of the changes that were able to happen. I was able to get the rule changed so that babies are no longer considered strangers on the floor of the house. And so Henry did make it onto the floor of the house one time around the time that I was asking question period. So I needed to be in the house. And he was with me when I voted one time. And so there were some things like that. We got change tables installed. But there's still quite a ways to go, I think, in terms of it being normalized and mm-hmm. in terms of the support that would need to be there. And there is a report that I helped work on how to make the legislature more family friendly, more accommodating to not just women, but other identities. But we need to see some more action. For example, having a calendar. That would certainly help.
Just knowing what's coming and what to expect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have an annual calendar, and we just found out last week some of what's going to be coming in the new year without much detail. So it's just really hard to plan, and it makes it harder for us to plan to support constituents. Harder to plan meetings even.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You're blazing a bit of a trail, but I guess the idea is that you know, parents of young kids shouldn't have to be blazing a trail. Or if we want to have that kind of representation, I guess we need to continue making modernizing the legislature, making it more of a realistic workplace for everybody.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's about having the legislature be a better representation of the actual population of New Brunswick, and it isn't right now. And there's not that many women, not that many, I guess when I say younger people, there's only a handful of us in our 30s. There's certainly not as much of a youth representation. There's not people of color. There's not people with visible disabilities. There's really a lot of accommodations that could be made, some different things to make it more accessible so that people can do their job. Because the whole point is I wanted to be able to do my job. So what needed to happen to make that happen?
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you about, another change that happened this year is that you were in opposition in a majority government situation as opposed to being in a minority government. That must have been a different experience. I'm imagining what were your takeaways from those two experiences?
Well, I would say that Premier Higgs has effectively governed as if he had a majority since he formed government. And we found that there wasn't an extreme amount of collaboration even in the minority government. However, that was solidified even more because it used to be that there was a chance when we voted on things that what government wanted to happen might not happen, that opposition parties could get something through. And so that did change. The other thing, though, is that this has all happened in the context of the pandemic. And so there was initially some more collaboration between the parties, and there was a lot more information sharing to opposition parties earlier on in the pandemic. But once the majority government was in place, and then especially this year, that has really fallen off as well. So really what we're seeing is the way the system has been designed, and we need electoral reform so that a party that has nowhere near a majority of votes isn't able to have all of the power. It's very frustrating. And having been on the inside, I see the need for electoral reform even more than I did before, because these systems really can't change if we just have majority governments in place. And frankly, again, even with minority governments, it really depends on who's in power, because the thing is, they want to get back to a majority, so they don't really want to make change when it's a minority situation. They just want to get back to having full power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, because there's always the threat of an election. The minority government can sort of make it so that, what the opposition parties cannot effectively vote against anything they're doing, because they would trigger an election in that sort of and become incredibly unpopular because of that. But I guess that would be solved with more of a coalition kind of framework. That might be something that would happen if we did have electoral reform.
Yeah, and so there's sort of coalition frameworks and some other types of agreements where they come up with sort of the parameters of what they will support and how they'll work together. I believe they're called supply and confidence agreements. They're out in BC. They had one for a while, and the thing is, it's easy for us to forget that there's other ways to do things, that there's other systems out there, that other countries have been working with proportional representation and other things for a long time. And so there's basically, what I'm saying is, it doesn't have to be this way. We could do things differently, but there's a lot of inertia in our current system. So I really think part of the answer is going to be for civil society to not only elect different people, so elect more Greens, obviously I think that, but elect more people, but push whoever's in power and really put pressure on government to change the system. I think that civil society is going to have to play a bigger role in making that happen, because it's not going to come from the older big parties that want to stay in power.
Right. Yeah, certainly doesn't seem on the radar. I want to talk a bit about some of the issues that came up in New Brunswick this past year and in Sackville. Mm-hmm. Obviously COVID-19 dominates everything. But we had, it's been quite a trip, 2021. We started out really focused on border issues. The Atlantic bubble was still in play and the changes around there. We went to a summer where, our entire public health order was dismantled and ended. Then in the fall, unfortunately, Sackville's Drew Nursing Home had an outbreak. We saw many people die, many people get infected. And there's still some questions around that. And now we're staring down the barrel of Omicron. This is a lot to cover, but how are you feeling, I guess, looking back at 2021, looking forward at 2022, in terms of COVID-19 in New Brunswick? What are your standout concerns, I guess?
I think that how I'm feeling is possibly similar to how other people are feeling, in that, at the beginning of this year in January, we were in a really serious situation. We went into the red phase that used to exist, where things were pretty locked down in this area. And so to feel that a year later that might be the type of thing that's in our future is really, I think, disheartening. with this pandemic, we're really in for a multi-year, we already know that now, multi-year pandemic. It's not going away. But I think even some of the messaging that's come out of government, you know, from Premier Higgs about, well, if we just do this, it'll all be fine. And even them, yeah, dismantling everything they had in place in the summer and then really hesitating to put it back in place in the fall has done a disservice to where we are now. What I would say is that I do have concerns about how it's been handled and how it's being handled. I think there's so many workers who are working so hard to take care of people, especially those who are frontline workers, in like hospitals, for example. We're seeing, that Omicron variant is arriving, and so likely things are going to get worse before they get better. And I think that people are really tired of the pandemic and aren't really sure what to do, because the messaging has been has changed very often, and the guidance coming out of the province is a little unclear as well. Federally, they're saying everyone should be going and finding the N95 masks and improving your masks. Pay attention to ventilation. And the province has really stayed away from talking about that. So I, unfortunately, throughout the whole pandemic, the communication has been confusing and unclear from the provincial government. And I see that continuing right now.
One of the other major things that, you know, went on in 2021 was a consultation over healthcare reform. And then mm-hmm. an eventual release of a sort of plan, much smaller than I think people expected, and all that mm-hmm. is happening while service at the Sackville Memorial Hospital just continues to sort of dwindle and dwindle due to nursing mm-hmm. shortages and sometimes doctor shortages. Now I guess we do have good news to report in that the NBNU have just approved or ratified at least one contract. And so hospital mm-hmm. nurses have a new contract finally. And hopefully that will help us out. When you look back at healthcare reform and the decisions made there, do you see some positive aspects, some decisions or some things that the government did that might be helpful in terms of the kind of problems that we're seeing across New Brunswick, but especially also in Sackville, with just not enough healthcare workers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, throughout the pandemic, we've had these consultations for various things, including a healthcare plan. And I think that one of my initial reactions to it was feeling underwhelmed, because what I saw that we needed was a bold plan for recruitment and retention, and this is how it's going to happen, and this is what we're going to do. And it seems that, you know, I'm not going to say they're doing nothing, but they are doing nowhere near what needs to be done at the government level. And frankly, I think there's a lot left to be desired with the recruitment at the horizon level as well. And so in this healthcare reform, it really only lays out some of the action items they plan to do for 2 years. It was supposed to be a 5-year plan. And I didn't see, you know, investments in the training of new nurses. I didn't see that type of thing that I think is absolutely needed. I saw a few things in there that I thought were good. There was a pilot project, Nursing Homes Without Walls, and that's being expanded. So that's great. The people who work on that project have done a great job supporting the Port Elgin and surrounding area. So that's positive. But there were some, you know, red flags for me. That it looks like we're going to see the increased privatization of healthcare management, with MedaV taking over some sort of primary care network. I think it's important that people have access to primary care, absolutely. But I am concerned about the privatization and therefore less accountability for how these things happen, how much is spent and where, and how they're being run. And that really concerns me, because we've already seen some issues, you know, with Ambulance New Brunswick. I think that there is something in there about communities being involved, and I think that the caution is that I don't want the government or Horizon Vitalité to download the responsibility onto communities. It was very vague what they were talking about. Horizon, as an employer, needs to be responsible for hiring, and then the government needs to be responsible for, thank goodness we have a contract now for some of the nurses, and they need to be responsible for making sure that the system's running and that we're training people. There shouldn't be someone in New Brunswick who wants to be a nurse who is put on a wait list and told they can't train to be a nurse. That's just ridiculous.
It's interesting that, you know, when we talk about this healthcare crisis, it's always recruitment is always mentioned as the key, recruitment and retention. Mm-hmm. But yeah, training or getting more people available in the field, in the healthcare fields, is never seems to be mentioned. But yeah, you're saying you would like to see more spots open up for nursing students and things like that.
Yeah, and for them to be fully funded. One of the problems in the past has been that when the government provided funding to the universities for training nurses, that they didn't fully fund the seats. And so it was costing the university quite a bit for each of those seats, because there's the clinical portion of the training as well, that's thousands of dollars. And so basically the government needs to adequately fund the seats and ensure that there's enough of them, and be accountable to the public around this. It was quite confusing for the past few years trying to get answers about the government actually cut $9 million that was going towards nursing seats at UNB and Université de Moncton. And it was going from committee to committee and in the House trying to get answers about what happened there and how they were going to fix it. So I think that there needs to be more transparency. And I think that's the theme across this government, not just on this topic.
You mentioned the fact that communities have been sort of called out to sort of participate in the recruitment efforts. And I know Sackville is very active on that front. There's a huge sort of groundswell here in terms of people wanting to save the Sackville Hospital. Now, the communities themselves, though, are about to change rather radically, Sackville included. We're under, I guess, threat. If that's the way most people around here seem to be looking at it, under threat of amalgamation right now. The province has proposed to amalgamate Sackville, Dorchester, and surrounding LSDs. You have an interesting perspective on this, because you sat on Sackville Town Council previously, did you not?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Yeah, that's how you started your political career. You know, I want to have a realistic take on this. Is this really bad news for Sackvillians, or is this not the end of the world, or what's your honest take on this proposal? Just looking at the proposal itself, not so much the process by which it happened yet, although I do want to talk about that, but what do you think of the possibility of amalgamation around here?
Yeah. And there's, it's a complex issue that I think, because there's legislation that's passed, but there's also the white paper that came out that is where the proposal for amalgamation happened. And those regulations aren't set in stone and aren't finalized yet. So, because I know a lot of people probably heard the legislation pass, which there's issues with that as well. But I mean, what I would say is I don't think it's the end of the world. And I also don't think it's what the community wants. And so that's really important. The minister, you know, had indicated forced amalgamation is not on the table, and here we see forced amalgamation happening, in some communities around the province, including our own. And so I think that honestly, like I spoke with the minister, I've spoken to the deputy minister, I've asked some questions in committee to try to get answers about exactly what it means. And part of the challenge with it is that the answer is, well, we'll figure that out in 2022. We will figure that out when we send a transition team. So it's hard to even really get a grasp of exactly what it means, frankly, mm-hmm. because some of the decisions around what it means haven't been made yet. I know one of the things that comes into people's minds is around tax rates. Well, the decision hasn't been made around what the tax rates will be and where. And so we actually don't know exactly what the implications would be.
The process is baffling. The process is somewhat baffling. As we did also take note that, like, the, you know, Sackville Town Council sent in a sort of last ditch, possible alternative to the province, because, as you say, mm-hmm. even though the Bill 82 has passed, Bill 82 mm-hmm. doesn't include the maps and the new boundaries, and it doesn't define what the new mm-hmm. municipal entities will be. That will come later. But those, you know, the towns were given and the municipalities were given just 4 weeks since the announcement of the white paper, and I think realistically even less time, because when the white paper came out, there was no plan for getting feedback from the various towns and municipalities, and then suddenly there was a date thrown out that was just, you know, 4 weeks from that announcement for them to give this sort of reasoned feedback on whether we should be amalgamated and with whom. Mm-hmm. I guess, so what you're saying is you had problems with how that process went.
Absolutely. The process has been really, I would argue, disorganized. I think they were really organized up until the white paper came out, and then they felt like, okay, we're done. Like, this is what's happening. And then they said, okay, we'll give you 2 weeks. And then they said, okay, well, actually, we'll give you till whatever date it is in December, about 4 weeks in total. So even the initial 2 week deadline, people thought, well, we don't even have time to react. We don't know what to do. It felt like they had decided and didn't really want to hear any more from the communities, and that they were just kind of done with it. Like, okay, this is what we're doing. Change is hard, the minister said to me when I asked questions in committee. Well, change is hard. And I said, well, yeah, change is hard when things come out of left field and you haven't even consulted properly about this. People didn't think this was coming for this area. And so, you know, Village of Dorchester has said, whoa, we don't want this. Sackville has said, whoa, we don't want this. And I wrote a letter in support of both of the municipalities and said, hit the brakes. And even if this needs to go into January, you need to consult with the communities and you need to come up with a plan that the communities are on board with. And so I'm waiting to hear. And I would like to be hopeful that the minister will listen. That's what the minister should do, but it remains to be seen what will happen, how much feedback they're going to take on the proposed amalgamation and the proposed changes, people pushing back. It's not just here. There are other places across the province that folks have been unhappy with what was presented and frustrated with not feeling heard.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure we have time. I want to open it up to you here. When, you know, 2021, 2022, on the cusp of things here, what's another standout issue for you that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, well, I was looking back on the year and thinking, like, what have we dealt with in the last year and what's to come? And I mean, we've covered a lot of things, municipal reform, healthcare. I think there's still a lot that's going to be worked on there. And then the pandemic is not over. And so dealing with, you know, calling on government to be more transparent and to offer better guidance to people, there are definitely concerns there. But looking at some other topics, but connected to the pandemic, proposed the Greens and called for paid sick leave. And we're calling on government to revisit that. especially in a pandemic, it became clear, it was already a problem, but clear people need paid sick leave and not everyone has it. These are the types of things that ideally we would see some improvements in our systems as a result of these challenges with the pandemic. So that's one thing that I think is really needed. Climate change, I think, can't ever really be that far from our minds. We saw what happened in British Columbia, but also Newfoundland and Labrador and Nova Scotia. We saw, you know, highways taken out, transportation routes taken out, let alone people's homes just destroyed with fires earlier and now with floods. And, you know, we are right beside the Chignecto Isthmus, and that is one of the most vulnerable places in North America when it comes to climate change, when it comes to sea level rise and potential overtopping of the dikes and being underwater here. And so I've been pushing that in the legislature, and we're waiting and waiting to see a study and to see action. There's so many vulnerabilities, and I think governments are not prepared on the mitigation side and definitely not prepared on the adaptation side on how do we protect our communities. So I think that's got to be top of mind, because every year we're seeing, whether it's droughts and or floods or whatever, we're being impacted. And we need to remember too, it's going to be whole communities that are impacted, but also those who are most vulnerable. We see that play out, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's climate change. Can people afford to take paid sick days? Can people afford to go stay in a hotel? Can people afford to get a mask? The you know, if we're going to need to wear N95 masks, can, you know, how does this affect people along income lines and other lines as well? So I think that's really important. I feel like there's so much that has happened at the provincial level and at the local level that but we also saw the QP strikes this year, and we'll see if the government's able to negotiate fair contracts for more workers in the new year. We know that there are more contracts coming up in the new year, so we'll see if hopefully there aren't more strikes and more labor actions, but I guess that we'll see what government's going to do.
Yeah. And labor will, I guess, yeah, continue to be the ongoing issue that it is. Now, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is impossible for us to fit in everything that mattered this year, very much mm-hmm. so, and we're running yeah. out of time. But do you have any, on a lighter note, any New Year's resolutions in the bag yet, Megan?
New Year's resolutions. Oh, goodness.
continue to remain COVID-free is, I think, everyone's number one resolution.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, to just try to stay safe and do everything we can to protect ourselves and each other. I would say maybe go outside more. I think that, especially when we're sitting in the legislature, basically from dawn to dusk or past dusk in the winter, I think that maybe trying to get outside more would be a good one. I think that should be a new New Year's resolution, right, to get some fresh air.
Sounds like a good one. Megan, I appreciate your time today. Best of the season and a happy new year to you and your family.
Thank you very much to you as well. Take care.
You've been listening to another holiday edition of Tantramar Report. That was a year in review conversation with Memram Cook Tantramar MLA Megan Mitten. As always, get in touch with us with comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.